I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, sanity strikes again, another common sense initiative for voters of this state to sign. Plus, we're going to again go to the campus of the University of Washington, where now a mainstream journalist has been targeted by rioters. Will the college finally care? And Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle running for the state house. We'll discuss her and her opponent, who believes that he's entitled to run unopposed. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. And welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Happy Thursday to all of you. Sanity strikes again. So we've been waiting for this. I kind of anticipated that someone was going to do it, that it was going to happen. We can add another common sense initiative to the six that were already put forth, three of them that were passed into law by the legislature, another three that will appear on the ballot in November, and hopefully Initiative 2066 will also now be on the November ballot. There's a lot of work to do between now and then to get the necessary number of signatures, but this is the Stop the Gas Ban Initiative, which would protect energy choice. Let's Go Washington, which is behind the other initiatives, is running this one as well. You will have Democrats who say, we didn't pass a gas ban. What are you talking about, Brandi? Just more right-wing lies. But you guys all know what the bill passed this legislative session in Olympia did. It is a bill that, yes, did they take out the language that would outright ban you using natural gas in your home or outright ban new hookups? Yes. But what they did is the entire bill they passed this legislative session was about speeding PSEs move away from natural gas. They want to force you by making it too cumbersome, too expensive to electrify your homes. So whether it's a gas ban in name or a gas ban in principle, I don't really make a difference there. So let's look at this initiative a little bit for the description that Let's Go Washington is given. So it says signing the initiative, because this isn't going to reverse a law. They made sure of that, remember, via referendum. They made sure, or that via an emergency clause in the bill they passed this session, we couldn't run a referendum on it. So it's initiative. So signing Initiative 2066 gives voters the power to protect natural gas for heating, cooking, and more, stop state and local governments and their agencies from banning, restricting, or discouraging gas and gas appliances in home and businesses, make sure gas utilities will continue to provide natural gas to customers who want it, stop the state from limiting natural gas service to homes and businesses like restaurants and breweries, protect people from having to switch to electric only, and keep the power on when our energy grid is at capacity in super cold or hot weather by making sure that people who have natural gas can use it and we're not just bound by an electrical grid that constantly is failing. Signing Initiative 2066, according to Let's Go WA, does not force anyone to use gas or gas appliances. It's just about letting you choose. Remember, Democrats are pro-choice. So can we be pro-choice on our gas? On our energy supply as well. It would not take away any energy incentives and rebates for those who do choose to perhaps electrify their home. And it would reduce the state's commitment, or it would not reduce the state's commitment to addressing climate change. So I'm glad Let's Go Washington is getting those three points out there about what this initiative does not do, because those are going to be sort of the things that Democrats say. First of all, they're going to say, well, we didn't ban natural gas, when they are on their way to banning natural gas. There's a reason why they're saying to PSE, we're going to speed up your ability to move away from natural gas. So that is just a lie if they come out with that. But then the other thing is going to be climate change. Oh my gosh, climate change. We can't allow you to have your gas stove because climate change. So this initiative does not reduce the state's existing commitments to address climate change. This is about giving people a choice. It's about making sure that if you've got a home powered by gas appliances, 5 years down the road, PSE doesn't say, well, we're not serving you gas anymore. So now you're on the hook for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to buy all new appliances, redo your home so you can electrify it. That's what this is protecting you from. It's not to say you can't. If you want to electrify your home, heck, if you want to put a giant windmill on the top of your home and power your home that way, if you want to put a windmill attached to a bicycle and only power your home via bicycle power, you do you, right? But people want to use gas appliances for a variety of reasons. And I keep going back to, gosh, I wish I'd put this in the show today. State Senator Emily Randall, who she lives in an area of the state that isn't served by PSC. So it was very easy for her to vote for the bill that allows PSC to move away from natural gas. And then just a few months before that vote, she literally posted a picture of herself when the power went out in her home and there was some issue with her heat at a friend's house with her little tootsies, her little toesies, roasting over a gas fireplace, saying she was grateful for good friends and a warm gas fireplace. So, and then she turns around and she votes for this PSC bill. That in and of itself is enough for me to support Initiative 2066. So here's the deal. Go to letsgowa.com. Is it Let's Go? I always screw this up. Letsgowa.com. Yes. Letsgowa.com if you want to look for places to sign this new initiative 2066, or if you want to order your packets so that you can go out and you can collect signatures, or you can just have your family and friends gather signatures as well, because this is needs to happen. Nicole?
It's letsgowashington.com.
No, it's also, you can type in Let's Go
Wall. Okay. The actual website. Well, the actual website is Let's Go Washington, but yes.
Or Let's Go Wall.
Or just Google like the rest of the world.
Let's Go Wall. So you can learn more about this, but this one is going to be overwhelmingly popular. Remember there was some polling maybe a month or so ago that said like 76% of people would support protecting natural gas.
Although I did say, I see from the Progressive Institute or something, they put out some polling that said the opposite. They said all of them were leaning towards no.
No. Oh. So as with all, and you're going to hear some barks today, because I brought the dogs to work. I was like, I'm going to bring the dogs to my new studio. Not working out well for me.
They're just not used to it.
They're very antsy.
It's a new space.
In a new space. And then they're like, well, you put us in the car. So you put us in the car to what? Sit inside? Why would you do that to us, you mean lady? But we love them. But, you know, they're loud. So this is just another common sense initiative. And it goes, the theme is the same. Vote yes, pay less. You vote yes, you pay less. You vote yes on this, you sign it, it makes it on the ballot in November. If you vote yes on Initiative 2066 and you have a gas home, you're going to pay less in the long run because your rates aren't going to shoot up, and also you're not going to have to electrify your home for tens of thousands of dollars. So love it. Glad they did it. All right, we got to talk about UW again. For the love, sue them. This is in my daily subscriber show poll today, which we'll get to coming up later on. Somebody's got to sue UW over this. The encampment is out of control. This isn't a free speech issue. This isn't just pacifist students out there holding signs and, you know, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. There's a lot of people there who are not students. In fact, there was one revealed to be a Seattle Times columnist or op-ed contributor. Like a guy in his, like, it looks like he's 50 or 60 years old out there on the lines telling Antifa, hold the line. So you've got non-students there. Many of them who have also taken over security in the quad, which is supposed to be the area where all students can move about freely. They're harassing journalists. They're harassing Jewish students by some accounts. And just last night, night before last, they graffitied almost every building on campus. Some of it with blatantly anti-Semitic graffiti, calls to violence, glory to the martyrs. The fact that this is allowed to continue is outrageous. But I wonder if something that happened yesterday will turn the tides a little bit. So I tweeted May 9th. Am I Nostradamus? I mean, for real, just call me Nostradamus because I predict everything that's going to happen. But on May 9th and on the show, we admonished the local news and mainstream media outlets for pretending like there wasn't violence at this protest. It was the day after Jonathan Cho and his security team was attacked. I mean, one of his security guards was mobbed and beaten bloody, a big cut across his face, a bunch of blood all over his neck. And I tweeted this with a segment we did criticizing some King 5 coverage. I said, news outlets that ignore violence in their coverage of protests are making a choice to ignore it. It's a choice that robs viewers and readers of a complete picture, and in Seattle emboldens the same extremists who have assaulted countless journalists over the past decade. And that's the element to it that I think bothers me the most. I've been covering protests in this state and in the Seattle area for almost 15 years. It's the same types of activists, the same agitators, the same playbook. And I watched over and over for May Day protests during the Occupy movement, during CHOP and the riots in summer of 2020. I watched things happening with my own eyes. Violence, vandalism, acts of domestic terrorism. I saw what happened to my own crew. We lived through it. And then to turn on the local news and see them saying mostly peaceful, treating police as the agitators, it was unreal to me, because what I didn't understand, and this was true for Fox 13 when I was working there as well, what I didn't understand is how can you not see the danger that you're putting your own employees in by downplaying the violence? When you're the news and you're downplaying acts of violence or outright hiding acts of violence, there was a dictate in our newsroom, and there are a couple of examples where reporters were assaulted and then they were told don't post it or don't report on it because they thought, oh, well, it'd make you even more of a target. So you're hiding acts of violence at a protest you're covering for your own reasons. Maybe it's bias, or maybe you really think, well, we can't have our reporters be more of a target. And you think for some reason that that's going to make these people less violent? That it's going to make them attack you less? This was the clip I criticized last week on King 5 News, where there was a reporter who, again, this is the night Charlie Kirk came to campus. So there were, you know, the pro-Charlie Kirk faction, the pro-Palestine faction. It was the same day that Jonathan Cho and video everywhere of his bodyguard being beaten bloody. And this was the end of this King 5 News report.
Yeah, so tonight there was a, I guess you could call it a conservative provocateur on campus holding an event, and the university did not want those two groups to interact. However, there were some interactions, you know, some yelling back and forth, but it didn't get that serious. Greg?
It didn't get that serious. Again, you know, like I said at the time, tell that to Jonathan Cho's bodyguard. Couldn't believe it. So now, as I predicted, Nostra Brandi, as I predicted, it's going to make news crews less safe as well. And yesterday, a Fox 13 photographer was just out during the day, middle of the day, on the campus getting B-roll. So just kind of standing back, I could see where he was placed, up on some stairs, wasn't down there, right in the middle of the quad, getting some B-roll down of the quad. And what happened to him was captured from a couple angles, but this is video from Katie Davis Court with the Post Millennial.
Look at this guy.
Dude, are you on drugs or something?
Look at this guy. Look at this mother. Hey,
dude, are you on drugs? Hi. Glad you like Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty. Who are you here with?
I'm with Fox 13.
Fox who?
Fox 13, Channel 13.
Okay. Yeah. Do you know, like, kind of why we're asking you not to film?
Yes, and honestly, I don't care, because this is a public space, it's a newsworthy event, and I have a right, just like she has a right to record me, because I'm in a public space. So you understand that you're going to a public event, a public protest, an ongoing public protest, that you want to get your message out, but then you don't want anyone to record that. You understand how kind of absurd that is? It's
just
still
like
here.
You're allowed to record in public places, why
yep.
To stop you from recording?
No, you're not. You're actually not. There is a statute that says you cannot interfere with other people's.
You cannot interfere because the so-called sacred law, sir, yeah. The good old sacred law.
Dude, honestly, if this is your idea, then you're pretty lame.
You're pretty lame. Rolling up in this space trying to record people.
Because it's literally my job.
Bruh, that's why you need to get out of here, weather boy.
I'll tell you what, if you want to pay for my autistic son's therapy lessons, cool.
Damn, yeah, some valuable film you get in.
Yep. All right. Touch it again.
Yeah, God. Wow, where do I start with that? Lot to get to. First of all, I know who that is. His name's Mike Harvey. He's a really nice guy. But it doesn't matter to them. You know, it doesn't matter to these agitators. First of all, what I'll say is the obvious, that the University of Washington has handed part of its campus over to people who are mentally ill. mentally deranged, probably on drugs, completely unpredictable, will harass anyone who challenges them. I think that's very, very apparent by that video. And so shame on the University of Washington for being in these weeks of negotiations to get what? Mentally unhinged people to leave. Just go in there and remove them. It's going to be fine, I promise you, in the long run. So Katie Davis Court is recording that, and it's, you know, the typical harassment that we see, blocking with, you know, umbrellas, and obviously they don't know the law, and he was articulating to them, you actually, she said, we have a right to be here, or you have a right to film in a public place, and we have a right to stop you. No, you don't have a right to stop him from exercising his First Amendment rights as a member of the press. I mean, I don't know what the law would do about blocking someone with an umbrella, but if you are restricting, as they were, his actual freedom of movement, then that's an issue. But you all know that. We all know that. And I'll tell you what, sorry, Fox 13 knows that too. Now, I feel bad for Mike Harvey. I do, and I'll just play one more clip just to solidify that this was actually a pretty serious situation, because when they came up to him, they were shining lasers, trying to shine lasers directly through his camera into his eye. Here's a clip from his perspective. Mike Harvey actually released on social media kind of an unedited version of this.
Okay, that's assault right there.
That's assault right there. Right there, right there, officer.
It is assault to hit someone in the eye with a laser.
You saw the green laser used there, kind of towards the beginning.
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, Rick. Good morning.
Like mentally,
Rick.
And if you damage the camera because of the value of the camera, it's a felony.
Good for him.
And I will have my employer will press charges.
Recording.
No, you're not. You're actually not. RCW
98-RCW9384.
This is perspective.
It's so sunny. It's so awful. Dude, I'm so glad you have your umbrella.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so sunny out. Negative vibes out today, right?
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, mostly from you.
Philip, do you know Philip? Do you know Philip, sir? Sir, I'm trying to talk about Philip. Do you know Philip?
Damn.
It is.
Damn, yeah, some valuable film you get in.
Yep.
Boop.
All right. Yep. Touch it again.
Absolutely ridiculous. You can come away from that, Nicole. Yeah, laser. Again, it's assault. It's against the law. It's ridiculous that the University of Washington is allowing this sort of conduct and this sort of behavior. And what do we get from UW? Well, first, let me make a point about the media. I feel bad for Mike Harvey. Nobody should be treated like that. But you'll notice on this show, every single time, without exception, whether it happened at January 6th, when members of the media had their cameras taken from them and knocked down, whether it's happened at a Trump rally, or whether it's happened at a far-left Antifa rally, riot, chop, every single freaking time that the mainstream media has been attacked, regardless of the ideology of the attackers, we have said something on this show when we've known about it, when it's a newsworthy occurrence, when it's something we're covering. And we stand up for them and we say something because we know that the same First Amendment that protects their rights to do what they're doing protect my right to do what we're doing on this show. Yet every single time someone like Jonathan Cho is attacked, Katie Davis Court is attacked, I'm attacked, do you think the mainstream media says shit? No, they don't say jack because they have no moral clarity. Oh, well, they deserve it. You know, independent journalists, right wing, conservative. We're not going to say anything. I made the same damn argument when Jonathan Cho was being blocked from attending press conferences by political flacks with Dow Constantine's office. And I told the media at the time, I said, if you don't stand up for Jonathan Cho, you're failing to stand up for yourself. And there is nothing stopping at a later date some sort of politician from doing the same thing to you that they're doing to Jonathan Cho. And when you start whining about it, we're going to look at you and say, look, we're on your side, but why aren't you being consistent? Why aren't you standing up for other people when their First Amendment rights are under attack? So I'll say it again to the mainstream media. I'll 100% stick up for Mike Harvey. This is horrible. This is wrong. It is the First Amendment that allows him to be there and on a public campus, no less. But I would encourage our friends in the local news, King, Cairo, Como, Fox 13, the Seattle Times, people who we expect better of, to stop ignoring acts of violence, even if they're against someone like Jonathan Cho, who you think is whatever, even if it happens to us, who you think all their competition, stop ignoring acts of violence, but take it a step further. Press people in power, elected leaders, ask them why they're not saying anything, why they're not doing anything, if they don't value the First Amendment. Press the University of Washington. That's your freaking job. That's your job. And it is a shocking, shocking level of hypocrisy when you complain about the media being under attack, but you don't say anything. You don't say anything when people who are attacked who you're not ideologically aligned with, or when you downplay and ignore violence happening at protests. So I'm not going to sit here and say, well, they deserve it, because nobody deserves it. But their own employers, their own newsrooms, have made this worse for every other journalist who shows up at a protest to cover it for people. I don't know how long it's going to take for you to learn that lesson. How many freaking years of the same people in the same city doing the same shit do we have to go through for you to speak up and understand that speaking up and being truthful about what's happening matters and it can save lives? I remember protests in downtown Seattle where I think it was a King 5 photographer got hit across the head with a pipe, big gash in his head. I've had photographers torn to the ground by their cameras backward. You know, we were mobbed at CHOP, and that was just the one of many things that happened to us. $50,000 news cameras with spray paint in the lens for trying to do their job. And still, these same media outlets act like it's not a big deal. They hide it, or they ignore it, or they downplay it to their own peril, to the peril of anyone else who relies on the First Amendment in this wonderful country of ours to keep the populace informed. So it's shameful. It's shameful that you continue to call yourselves news organizations and journalists, and you miss the mark on this so freaking badly. And meanwhile, while the media is out there floundering and failing, the president of the University of Washington is doing the same, and she's getting away with it because there's not accurate or there's not enough media scrutiny over what's going on, not enough pressure over what's going on. She put out another statement basically saying, please, we're going to ask you really, really nicely to disband the encampment on the quad. This is like the, third or fourth time that they've just said, you know, it's kind of a security risk. Could you maybe, I don't know, take your tent somewhere else? Like maybe not do this anymore. So here's the latest statement put out yesterday by the president of UW, Anna Marie Cossey. While I strongly support free speech and peaceful protest, I also strongly support the rights of all our community members to live, learn, and work without fear. I want to thank our Office of Campus Community Safety, UW facilities, and state and local partners for supporting our community despite challenging circumstances, including two very tense counter-protests. Are you kidding me? Like, calling out the counter-protests? Give me a freaking break. But every day, the encampment remains, safety concerns escalate for our UW community and for the people in the encampment itself. We again call on members to dismantle the encampment voluntarily for everyone's safety, end the vandalism to our campus, and continue constructive engagement with us on the issues of concern. I've been a member of this community for nearly 40 years. This is my home and my extended family. I have always led through engagement. The situation now is untenable. I'll reiterate, the university's response to students' calls for change will not be based on an encampment. There are many ways for voices to be heard that don't require tense, violent rhetoric and vandalism. Change will be through constructive engagement on issues that are important and meaningful to our students and broader campus community. How soft. How soft can you be? How dim can you be to believe that some nicely worded statements that suggest the only real problem has been dangerous counter-protest, you really think that that's going to get these people, many of whom aren't students, they're not students of the university that you're in charge of, they don't have any obligation to listen to you, and they're not going to listen to you. And they're not there. This is the big thing. They are not there to get UW to divest from Boeing. They don't care. You could do that today. You really think that they'd pick up and leave? No. They're there because this is what 90% of them do professionally. Whether it's on I-5, whether it's blocking access to the airport, whether it's taking over 6 square blocks of a city. This is what they do. And you have allowed them to continue it despite violence, despite widespread vandalism, despite anti-Semitic rhetoric. And your response to it all is to ask them to please move. Give me a break. All right, coming up next, King County, the latest numbers are in, has seen a huge uptick in homelessness. Well, color me shocked that the homeless industrial complex isn't working. First, if you're in the market to sell your home, I highly recommend reaching out to our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. Our undivided viewers, Bryce and Carla, did. They are selling their home in Bellevue to move to Florida, which they're now in Florida right now. They sold their home in January. And Bryce said he was just really impressed with everything that Wes Jones and his team brought to the table.
His attention to detail, he was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for, and most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about Wes that you can really appreciate if you've ever had to work with real estate agents is he's not like a Johnny come lately. He's been doing this for a long time. He's been through the market volatility, through the ups and downs, through crazy interest rates and back again. So he knows how to navigate a climate like the one that we're in right now and make sure that you get top dollar. Bryce and Carla, they sold their home in 7 days over list price, even in January with the rates the way they were. And now they're living their best life in sunny Florida. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Wow. This is even more disappointing than I anticipated it would be. So the homeless industrial complex is keeping people in homelessness. That is what it's doing. That's what it's designed to do. When you pump billions of dollars into something, where you have political cronies, where you have quote-unquote nonprofits that seek to benefit financially, they would cease to benefit any longer and have the jobs there, the money coming in, if they fixed the problem, right? So they're getting enriched by there being a lot of homeless people. So it would be really dumb for us to think that they want to solve homelessness and stop the gravy train. Which is why organizations that are volunteer, like We Heart Seattle, to me, are way more of the ticket. They're doing way more with way less. But the numbers prove what I'm saying here. So these, what I really get joy out of is these numbers are from the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. Remember that was billed like 5 years ago as our region's solution out of homelessness? And it has been an utter failure ever since. And even people on the left have called for it to be disbanded because organizationally, it's absolutely a disaster. The first CEO ended up resigning. And then it's just these bloated salaries. You've got person after person after person after person after person making six-figure salaries, supposedly helping people who are suffering in squalor on the streets. And yet homelessness in King County is up 23%. 23%. This is from the 2024 point in time count. 16,385 people. 16,385 people experiencing homelessness in King County. That's insane. And that is 23% higher than when they did their count in 2022 for 2022 numbers. Up near insane. Up nearly 25%. Wow. Now, when it comes to the breakdown, right, because we're told like, oh, this is a housing issue. Brandy, this is just because you need to put people in homes. We need to give more money to political cronies and to build homes and affordable housing. Interesting. Well, I find it Now, I'm not sure how much to trust the King County Regional Homelessness Authority's numbers, but actually when I look at these, I think, yeah, that's probably about right. So 12% of these people are adult survivors of domestic violence, okay? And then it characterizes 6% as veterans. It says 49% are chronically homeless, so in and out of homelessness. And then here's these two figures, which are the ones that are suspicious to me. 28% adults with serious mental illness. 35% adults with a substance use disorder. I find that highly unlikely that it's only 35% with a substance use disorder and 28% with a serious mental illness. So you're basically telling me, because these numbers don't really like add up to 100. So I think they looked at these individually, right? It was like a piece of a pie. So of the 100% who are homeless, 12% are adult survivors, but that doesn't mean there's not overlap there between someone who's a survivor of domestic violence, but also might have substance abuse disorder or a serious mental illness. And then, of course, racial inequities. Do you want to say something, Nicole?
You're looking I was just going to say that chronically homeless, for sure, those people qualify as mentally unstable. If you can't figure out a way to stay home, then something's wrong, right?
Especially with all the services available to you.
So I don't understand that being its own category. But.
Yeah, I don't either. And the vast majority of people who are homeless are white. I would just point that out as well. Right, but
But it's racist because it's not enough of the others. Or it's more of the others considering the percentage of population.
Well,
so they
but
still
also the number of black people who are homeless has declined as a percentage of the total number of homeless since 2022. But the number of white people who are homeless went from 41% of that number to 51% of the number. That's kind of racist to me. But maybe that's like the DEI efforts. We're just focusing more on helping people based on the color of their skin, not on their need.
It's
white people can stay there on the street and just die for all we care. Yeah, this is insane stuff. 23%. Just think about that. I want you to just really noodle on that for a second. All the money. All the money that we've been taxed, you know, tax increases people have willingly agreed to pay in the Seattle area, but in King County, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And we have still 23% more people living on our streets. It's insane to me. And we allow the King County Regional Homelessness Authority to continue to function, to continue to get all of this money to do that. That's the outcome. And can you, I'm sure one of the things they'd say is, oh, it's the pandemic still. Oh, yeah, it's just, you know, we're just the pandemic, the impacts just keep going. It'll be 2050 and they'll be saying it's the impacts from the pandemic. No, they get money by there being a problem. If the problem ceases to exist, so does the money. So the homeless industrial complex, for that very obvious common sense reason, is never and never intended to solve homelessness. And the numbers bear that out. Coming up next, Andrea Suarez is running for office. We're going to discuss and also talk about her very narcissistic opponent. First, I've shared my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, down around 40 pounds. I describe it to people like this. 60 days of really hard work. A lot of people in those 60 days, they lose 20 to 30 pounds. Which was the case for me. I lost almost 30 pounds on the program in 2 months. And then you carry on with some simple lifestyle changes that make you, that allow you to keep that weight off, but also don't make you feel like you're on a lifelong diet. And you can do more rounds of the 60-day program if you feel like you need to lose a little bit more weight, but you can do anything for 60 days, especially when you see the types of transformations that some people on the program have seen. As I've said over and over, it's not magic. It is hard. It is commitment. But you have a plan. You have a team in Dr. Ryan Coogan and Eastside Weight Loss Clinic folks who are going to help you stay on track. And you have a whole community of people who've done the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program that you can reach out to and have had fantastic results. So if you're thinking that this program sounds like something you could do, no prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines, just teaching you what to eat in the right portions and how to keep that weight off for life, schedule a 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. It's totally free. You can ask any questions you have. Visit EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. That's EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I don't know how to feel about this. I have mixed feelings. Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle is running to be a Washington State representative in the 43rd legislative district. And one of the things that's most shocking about it to me is that she never asked if I thought it was a good idea. She never sought my advice on this. And I find that truly unbelievable. Boop, just kidding. You don't have to ask my advice, Andrea. But this came out of nowhere, and I'm like, man, she didn't even bring this up to me. So of course, by now, you know Andrea Suarez very well. She is a friend of the show. She is full of common sense, and she was a regular Seattle citizen who simply got sick of watching our beautiful parks in Seattle overcome by homelessness and trash. She was so fed up, one day she goes out and she just starts cleaning up a park. And now she has built it into this truly grassroots movement of volunteers, thousands of people who will come out and do what the city is not doing, do what the county is not doing, do what the state is not doing. Effective outreach to people living in encampments, on the streets, and cleaning up trash, more than 1 million pounds of trash to date, and turned We Heart Seattle into this huge, I think, first of all, wonderful example of what can be done when you step outside the homeless industrial complex, and a wonderful example of what can be done when you have citizens who become absolutely fed up with the speed of government. So Andrea Suarez has now decided and filed to run for state representative in Legislative District 43, which is being vacated by former Speaker of the House, Frank Chop. So he was in that seat for years and years and years. So obviously there was going to be a lot of competition for it. It represents a good chunk of Seattle. And it's official. I looked at her PDC filing, although she registered as a Democrat. We might have to have some conversations with her. No, I think she is pretty liberal. I don't think she's ever denied that. But she also doesn't see what's happening on our streets as a progressive thing. You know, what's happening to homeless people on the streets and drug abuse. And let's be frank, if you want to win in Seattle, you kind of got to be a Democrat. So she's running. Now, I'm not going to offer too much on this because I want to have her in to talk about it. I worry, I guess, that she'll get, like, she's so effective outside the system in doing what she's doing, I think it'll just tear her heart out to see how incompetent people are in government. And you can make a difference by getting, you know, common sense people into government. But man, down there in Olympia, the Democratic Party has so lost its way. And you can, I'd be welcome a common sense vote in Andrea Suarez on the Democratic side, 100%. I just think it's going to be soul sucking for her to see truly how fringe they are in Olympia and how much pressure she'd be under to vote a certain way, although she's no stranger to pressure. So anyway, Andrea Suarez running for state representative in the 43rd. We'll have her on to talk about it. But today, I want to talk about her opponent for a second. Nicole, maybe we could find some information about him by looking at his Twitter account. Can we go to his Twitter account really quick and see? Oh, no! Oh, bummer, I'm blocked. Yeah, just looked the other day. Sean Scott, who is also running, he's a socialist, let's be very clear, but he's going to pretend to be a Democrat. I think, Nicole, you might have to Google this. I'm pretty sure when Sean Scott ran for city council in 2019, he ran as a Democratic socialist. I believe that's the case. We'll double check. So Sean Scott, how you might know his name and face, he ran for Seattle City Council in 2019, and he lost to Alex Peterson. Thank goodness. I was at Fox 13 at the time. I interviewed both of them. I remember doing that. Had a perfectly pleasant conversation with Sean Scott. So how I ended up blocked, I'm not so sure. So maybe we could get some information about him from his website. Yeah, I don't think I'm blocked on his website yet. It says, about Sean. Sean is the policy lead at the Statewide Poverty Action Network. As a policy champion for anti-poverty programs, he has worked in collaboration with other economic justice advocates, urging the state legislature to expand social safety net programs, enact strong consumer protections, and fund affordable housing and disability services. Yeah, sounds like the exact opposite of the person that we need in Olympia right now. But here's the real kicker. Okay. So on his X account, which I can't see, but thankfully there are ways around that, Sean Scott posted his first political ad after the filing deadline passed. And he seems very upset that anyone would have the audacity to run against him.
Under normal circumstances, a candidate that is running in a very progressive district with the endorsement of an outgoing 30-year incumbent and with significant in-district name recognition and the fundraising and volunteer energy to show it, that candidate would normally be running unopposed.
What? No, they wouldn't. The entitlement. Even the stranger called him out for that video. The entitlement of saying, normally, someone who has my credentials and support and name recognition and fundraising would get to run unopposed. What country are you living in? What is this? I had to, first of all, and also, can you play that clip one more time? The weird, like, porn music is just very strange to me.
Under normal circumstances, like,
not that I've ever watched
candidate
porn,
that is running
but
a
I
very
imagine.
Progressive district with the endorsement of an outgoing 30-year incumbent and with significant in-district name recognition and the fundraising and volunteer energy to show it, that candidate would normally be running unopposed.
Like, this is crazy stuff. The narcissism, and again, this is someone who's only ever lost. His only race was, he was a losing race in the city council, but now he believes he has this entitlement. I'm surprised he didn't pull the race card there. This entitlement that I should be running unopposed, but since I'm not, I guess we have to actually campaign and do some work. Here's the second half of that campaign video.
But we knew because of what our campaign represents, because of the vision that we have put forward for a better Washington, a more fair Washington, an inclusive Washington, a sustainable Washington, and an accessible Washington, that we were going to have opposition. Now that filing week has come and gone, and we know that we're going to have opponents in this race, our goal on the Better Washington campaign for the 43rd Legislative District is going to be to send a very loud and clear message. And that message is that the people of Fremont, of Capitol Hill, of Wallingford, the University District, Eastlake, Montlake, Belltown, First Hill, downtown Seattle, are all in for a Better Washington.
Great. So here's the choice in this race then. You have a choice between a narcissist who thinks he deserves to run unopposed and a woman who spends every waking hour out helping people in need, quite literally getting her hands dirty. You have a choice between a guy who is so thin-skinned, apparently, that he blocks anyone who disagrees with him politically on Twitter, and a woman who welcomes disagreement and invites people who disagree with her to come out and go to encampments with her. Wow, that's a really tough choice for the people of the 43rd Legislative District. All right, coming up next, we'll have our weekly segment, Florida Report, with my sister, including a very high-risk Pokemon card theft that did not end well for the would-be thief. First, this weekend is the grand opening of Phase 2 at Natchez RV Resort. If you're looking for somewhere to escape the crazy and you're like, yeah, I've got an RV, or maybe you're thinking about getting one, I mean, this is a luxury RV resort. Everything you could want. 300 days of sunshine. Miles of trails. You can walk your sweet dogs. A dog park. Wineries nearby. They've got pickleball courts. Man, they've got playgrounds. Swimming pool and hot tub coming soon, 4,300 square foot clubhouse, gourmet kitchen, great room, fitness center, showers, laundry, everything. And there's just so much outdoor recreation all around Natchez RV Resort in Sela. We spoke with Tig with the resort because we were curious. They already did phase one, which sold out very quickly, all the lots. And so I asked him, for people considering buying in phase two, what kind of folks will they be living around?
It's an awesome group of people. I can't say better things. It's all very like-minded people. I'm sure a lot of them listen to your show. It's a lot of people still living and working over here in the greater Seattle area that just want that home base to go to, and they want quality. They want to keep it a resort and not just have it be a park. And it's very tough these days with RVers for them to find a place to go, especially a quality spot. This is one they own. They can treat it like a second home, have their big RV sitting over there. If they get off work on a Friday and feel like just shooting over there, they know it's an option. They can also, when they're not using the lot, we have a great rental program where we can put it into the rental pool, and they can rent it back out a weekend to the general public and have them bring some money coming in for them when they're not using it.
Yeah, you imagine, go over there, you've got all those amenities surrounding you. So the Phase 2 grand opening this weekend features 21 extra large RV lots, complete with water, power, sewer. Grand opening pricing starting at only $79,900. Reservations are filling up fast. We're told there's a couple spots left if you want one. Reserve now, 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, or NatchezRVResort.com. All right, after all the insanity happening in Washington State, I think we need more than ever to check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State of Florida.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Hello, hello, Miranda.
Hello.
You look so glum when we came on. Is everything okay?
I look blonde?
Glum. Gloomy.
Oh, glum. Out. No, it's really hot outside, so I like literally was running to get inside, and that's why I'm glum.
Oh, good. Yeah, sweaty. Okay. California, not California. Who confuses California and Florida? Nothing to be confused, just the palm trees. No. Florida was just named the state in the nation with the best education. What were the why? How?
It usually has to do with opportunity that's offered from education received in the state. This is also in regards to both like higher education and K through 12 education. I think it also has to do with like the availability of education to students around the state and other factors like that. It does not have anything to do with teacher pay, because we have been under a lot of scrutiny for paying our teachers not very much, but I think every state is a little bit guilty of that. But despite all the, you know, culture wars and book bans and what have you that Florida's been going through, we've still been able to put kids through at a really high graduation rate and offer them a lot of like opportunities within the state for higher education from graduating from Florida schools.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you bring up all those things. There's been so much controversy around education in Florida. It's like, well, turns out it's working. Turns out they're doing just fine. And yeah, the teacher pay thing, you know, teachers here, the WEA is a really strong union, and they're constantly, we need higher pay. It's for the students. You know, we're doing this so we can be better teachers. Meanwhile, our test scores are absolute trash, and we have some of the highest paid teachers in the country. So I don't see a correlation there. I'm not saying teachers shouldn't get paid well. Yeah. I'm not saying that at all. But if you're not going to teach your child, your students well, unless you're paid more, or you're going to go on strike, to me, that's not what you should be focused on.
That's
okay.
True.
In coming soon to Florida, which I have to wonder if the Miami Beach strip clubs are okay with this. This was part of a human trafficking bill, but it is going to raise the age where you can be a stripper from 18 to 21.
Yeah, it is. It's going to make it so anybody under the age of 21 can't work within the adult entertainment establishments here in the state. And because Florida is such like, we rank pretty high when it comes to a human trafficking hub, I think that this is probably a really good way to kind of avoid putting younger people in the type of danger they just don't need to be in. And also like a lot of these establishments, there's drinking and things like that. So I think it all just kind of goes hand in hand. And, you know, I'm all for freedom, but, you know, I think protecting like young people who aren't in a good position to make, you know, decisions for themselves in that way, it's probably good to raise it up to 21 and just give people a few more years to think out what they'd like to do with their lives and how they want to make their money.
Yeah, I think as a country, we need to reevaluate the age of an adult, because we there's no consistency there, right? It's like, okay, you can go to war, but you can't drink booze. You can, you know, go to war, but you can't be a stripper, or you, you know, you can't smoke weed or whatever it is. And so it's like, okay, either you're an adult or you're not an adult. And in Washington State, you know, all these I think you have to be 18 and have a parent, you know, consent to you getting a tattoo or an ear piercing still, but you can get some sorts of gender care before you're 18, like hormone therapy.
Yeah.
So there's no consistency there.
No, and I'm there's fine. Not.
And also, today's 18-year-olds are not the 18-year-olds of the 1950s. They're not. No. They're far less mature and capable of dealing with the big wide world out there. We've done that to them as a society. Mm. I hate to say it. I don't know if people are going to agree or disagree. I almost think it's time to make the age of majority 21.
Yeah, voting, I kind of agree everything. With that. I mean, this bill, in addition to that, also is putting a lot of funding into like the preventative measures and that they're going to need to take to make sure that this bill actually like people like abide by it. It's going to create, I think, 8 full-time positions with the Florida Department of Health to help combat any complaints against businesses that maybe are non-compliant, and also like to help investigate if somebody maybe is working under like false pretenses of their age and also is being coerced into working. And then they're also putting a bunch of money through this bill into like training of law enforcement officers and stuff in dealing with situations so they are able to like properly identify what's going on when these complaints kind of get filed. So,
yeah. And what kind of creepy adult man wants to watch an 18-year-old strip, like, you know, or a 19-year-old? That's just weird. But yeah, we need to have a conversation as a country about what actually constitutes an adult these days. Let's end with this one, because last week on the show, we talked about the MMA fighter who wrangled the alligator. Well, now it's an MMA coach who thwarted a $30,000 Pokemon card theft, which is like $30,000 for Pokemon cards?
It's pretty insane. I mean, I know our little brother was super into it when they first like started getting popular, so I hope he hung on to some of his original cards from like 2001. But apparently this man walked into a game shop here in Miami, asked to see a binder full of like very rare Pokemon cards. And as he was perusing through them, he just grabbed the binder and started walking out, knowing that these, you know, game shop employees weren't going to chase after him. He just kind of laughed at them and walked away. Well, he walked into a parking lot with 2 MMA coaches with their shirts off that happened to be around and saw that the shop owner had came out like, oh, stop them. And stop them he did.
Oh my gosh, I love that. What are the chances? That's just karma. That is absolute karma. And then you walk out and it's like, oh, you know, love it. I feel more bad for the alligator than I do for the human being that got wrangled by the MMA.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Good stuff today, Miranda. Thank you so much. Sorry about the heat there. Not.
It's okay. It's okay. We're dealing with it. We could use a little bit of rain. So if you guys want to send us some rain, that would be nice.
Yeah, we'll work on it. All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I haven't really thought of that before until Miranda and I were having that conversation. I just feel like make it 21. Do you agree with me, or is that very anti, like, you know, I'm very government hands off and sort of let people make decisions, but all the stuff.
I'm totally okay with it.
Kids are not what they used to be.
No, they shouldn't. I don't think they should be voting.
We're a long way from America's greatest generation.
Yep.
And you look at what's happening at UW and I'm like, 21 at least. I mean, I'm still, you know, I was going to say I'm still maturing, but that sounds different. I'm still learning, you know, and growing and all this stuff. But yeah, 20, the more I think about it, the better 21 sounds. Definitely for strippers. Like I said, who's going and like, oh, I want to.
It is creepy.
Check out an 18-year-old stripping, weirdos. Not you guys, obviously, but I'm sure there'll be some comments on that coming up in viewer comments. First, our friend Ben Bailey took the first Mark challenge. He is a great friend of the show. He also did Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, by the way. And he is just one of the wonderful, many wonderful examples of undivided viewers and listeners who have taken the first Mark challenge and just been so happy with where their insurance is at after that. So he and his wife, Leslie, they saved over $1,500 a year by simply going to First Mark, doing the challenge, and then having First Mark recommend different carriers for them. Do we have a clip with Ben? Here you go.
I mean, you know, more than anything, it was really kind of drilling down and looking at the current coverages that we have today. And if those were adequate for, you know, say, if we had a major incident here at the house, Were our cars covered adequately, or were they actually, in our case, over covered, right? We have one car that's fairly new and another one that's a few years old. And the one that was a few years old actually has had too much coverage on it. So that helped as well.
Yeah. So if you're, maybe you need to save some money, maybe you're not sure if you have the right insurance, or you're paying for insurance you don't even need, do the FirstMark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Mike and I trust them with our insurance. The Undivided Podcast trusts them with our business insurance. I'm telling you, FirstMark Insurance, doing the challenge, it's a no-brainer. You never pay them a dime. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Oh, we got some super chats today, huh? Is it because I swore? Is it because I swore at the media? It just, you know, I don't care. Mike's on vacation.
I was going to say, that's exactly why. Mike's on vacation.
The dogs are here. Oh, you got Lucky over by you. I wish we had a doggy cam. We'll have to set one up. Lux hanging out right next to you. She's so cute. Don't worry. We'll go for a WALK soon. Susie with a $50 super chat says, feisty Brandy is the best. I'm always feisty. Sometimes I just hide it. Summer CS with a $4.99 super chat just for no reason, huh? No comment with that one?
Yep.
Let's see. Amy Dawson, Brandy, the female in that B-roll at UW looks like the same female that was following you guys around. Hair down this time, though? I'll look at it again. Could be. The voice sounds
I actually thought that, too, and I was going to go back and check, and then I didn't have time.
I mean, it's
been
obviously
a wild morning and still pulling comments.
Obviously quite possible because, you know, it's an encampment and there's not a ton of people there, maybe 100, not 100 during the day. So I shall check on that because remember when she came up to us, she had a mask on.
Right.
So now maybe the face has been revealed. Let's see. Krista M., so talking about Andres Juarez running in the 43rd district against Sean Scott. Did you ever look at whether Sean Scott was a Democratic Socialist?
It says he was a Democrat. It doesn't say socialist on the anything that I wrote, but multiple agencies that reported on him called him a socialist. So,
oh yeah, it says Sean Scott, he, him, Statewide Poverty Action Network, a member of the Seattle Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he is a Democratic Socialist. So you can act like you're some mainstream Democrat who shouldn't be challenged for anything. We don't need any socialist light, socialist pretending to be something else. But Krista M says he needs to run a pose to be able to win. Well, but is that not crazy? Like, I would have expected that because of who I am, that I would deserve to run unopposed. Like, how un-American is that? Wild.
Thank God Andrea's running.
I know, but I have to have a long conversation with her about it because I just don't want her to get caught up in the drama and the incompetence of politics. But yeah, I mean,
she's up for it.
She's up for anything. She's great. Yeah. She's any task. I know that she will do well.
Save us from the Democratic Socialist.
Yeah, Heidi Ryan, the assistance of housing should be for working individuals. They are the only ones who truly need assistance. Mental health is medical. Chronic criminals need a timeout. I agree that, look, if you are homeless in this state simply by virtue of you lost a job, you're fleeing domestic violence, you know, a situation that really was out of your control, you know, and I'm not talking about drug abuse or something, there's help for you like that. If you want help and you really have no other issues keeping you homeless, like mental health issues, drug abuse, you can get help in a second. You go someone like Mary's Place as a woman fleeing domestic violence. There's plenty of help out there for you. And so that's why I say our homeless crisis is really a mental health and drug crisis. All right. Erica Dorning with a $4.99 super chat. Brandy, do you think the college is worried about getting sued by protesters, especially after what happened with Seattle paying protesters in a settlement? I mean, I'm sure, but I also, and this is the subject of our daily subscriber show poll, which we'll get to coming up momentarily. I also think that other students have enough grounds to sue UW as well. If you're a Jewish student and they've created this environment where you've been harassed and made to feel unsafe, you don't think that UW can be sued over that as well? Okay, let's see. H with a $20 super chat. Question, who controls our local media? Is it Inslee or Ferguson that stopped the media from reporting the truth? Look, I don't think that there is some big overarching media lord who's pulling the strings. I never experienced that. What I did experience is really deep-seated bias. And the worst kind of bias where you don't recognize it. You have your worldview, as everyone does, as a journalist, and it's filled with people who are not, they were once in journalism in America, fiercely independent-minded, but they're not anymore. They've lost their innate curiosity and their ability to think critically and independently. And so they're driven by ideological decisions. And you never see the media downplay or ignore violence on the right. In fact, sometimes they just outright, you know, they instead of downplaying it, they make it seem like it was worse than it was. And so it's that I go back to, I'm not acting like I'm perfect or I haven't missed things or I'm completely, you know, morally consistent all the time. I try really hard to be, but, you know, sometimes I misstep. But I feel like every time there's been a video, you know, of reporters being harassed at Donald Trump rallies, of, you know, the camera equipment all in a pile on January 6th from people who'd taken it and ripped it off people. I said something about all of that because I don't care if you're attacking the First Amendment from the right or the left, you're still attacking it. You're attacking people who are trying to do a very important job under the protection of our Constitution. And so I just, you see violence against the press handled very differently by the press, whether it's perpetrated on the right or the left. The left, they're like, oh, you know, they're fighting for a cause, like, great, yay, and we're just gonna hide it. And it's just a real deep-seated bias. And you saw that in the King 5 report, where he says, there was a little bit, but it was not a big deal. Yeah, when a guy's got blood across his face and was, you know, ganged up on by five people, that is a big deal. There's, you're making a choice to ignore it. You're making a choice that's driven by bias. And it's a choice, as we saw here, that only hurts your own employees and only hurts the state of journalism in America. I don't know what will get them to wake up. Liz says, keep the swears coming because this is ridiculous. Oh, we really did get a lot of Matthew Cook, $5 super chat, give me a hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I think you missed the sub-sailor.
I'm going up and down. Okay. Sally, yes, with the $5 super chat. Swear jar justice for journalists. Yes. Old sub-sailor, $20 super chat for the swear jar. Yeah, we're going to need to pump some in today. Is that all of them?
I think we got them all.
Okay, oh, I think we got them all.
I think we got them all.
Okay, we can always fit them in after sanity check if we missed a couple of them.
Yeah.
Can we get to our daily subscriber show poll before we head into the rest of our show, please? So this was about what's happening on the campus of the University of Washington. And I asked subscribers this morning on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you believe students at the University of Washington have grounds to sue the college over its continued allowance of the occupied protest zone? Because again, they're paying tuition there, right? So it's this balance between, okay, what is First Amendment protected speech? You know, you can't sue over that. But if there's an environment of lawlessness like CHOP, where you had businesses that sued over it, right? Businesses sued the city of Seattle over CHOP because of the environment it created. So a lot of you are saying yes. Susan Johnson says, how long would a pro-life group be allowed to take over the quad? Answer, never. Yeah, that's true. Jack Hartstock says, I donate $100 to $200 a year to UW. Not anymore. I'm disgusted by this whole mess. Good for you. And that's what it takes. UW, yeah, they have their big donors, but you can get a bunch of little donors, and that creates a big problem for them, and that's really what needs to happen here. Joel Locke says, the only way change will work is if you go after the administration and their money. The arrogance of university staff like this is unfathomable. Steve Gordon says, they should be able to for sure, but the chance to actually succeed in a Washington court is pretty close to nil. E says, I don't understand why it's taking so long for students across the world to figure out they are adults and can sue, not just individually, but collectively as well. Anti-Semitism has been a crime since 1947. Julie B, I'm saddened and embarrassed by the lack of sane leadership at my alma mater. I'm embarrassed and I didn't even go to school there. I haven't checked in on whether there's any woke stuff happening on the campus of the University of Nebraska, my alma mater. I tend to think probably not. All right, before we dive into our sanity check for today, guess who's in Cabo, just living his best life? Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. He joins us every Thursday, and today's no exception. Even though he's in Cabo, he's very, very dedicated. And so he opted to join us in between. He had an embarrassing tan line, so we'll talk about that. But he still joined us anyway. And we thought we'd talk to him about what's happening with Mexico's economy, because the peso is actually doing very, very well. So is that because the United States and our economy isn't doing so well, or what's leading to that, and what impact does it have on Americans who visit or want to retire to Mexico? Zach Abraham, live from Cabo. And you're wearing a hat because you told us you wore your hat backward on the beach, and now you've got like a white line. So yeah, I'm snitching on you. That's funny. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I told you this. I told you this in confidence here.
Nothing's in confidence.
Yeah.
Since you're in Mexico, we figured a couple days ago there was a story that came out. The headline, the strength of the peso is deterring many Americans from moving to Mexico. The peso has strengthened 16% against the dollar in the last 2 years. So is the peso getting stronger? Is the dollar getting weaker? What should we make of that?
It was funny when you brought up this topic because shocker to you guys, I was just having this conversation while I was down here. And what is fascinating to me is the amount of people looking at, talking about, considering moving, building, whatever down to Mexico. And so I think that that article is a pretty big non sequitur. I think that article is tying things, like, for instance, the assumption that people don't want to move here or come down here. I actually have an uncle and aunt who live most of the time down here in Cabo. And your dollar still goes so much further.
Yeah.
Real estate on a comparative level, it's not even close. It's still much cheaper. So I love the question, but the dollar and the peso have, there's still a massive gap. I mean, I've been down here before when I think the spread was 22, 25 pesos to one. You're at 15, 16 pesos to the dollar now. So there's still a huge spread there. And then on a comparative level, my uncle and aunt have a absolutely gorgeous, in a private gated neighborhood with guards, you know, resort style pools, beautiful condominium, probably about 1,800 square feet, two bedroom, two bath, with this incredible view overlooking the bay. You know, something like that goes for $700,000-$800,000 in downtown Cabo.
Oh,
okay. So you think about that and you're like, holy smokes. When you get down here and see it and see how spectacular it is, you know, that thing is going to go, it's going to keep going up. And you just look at places like, you know, the US. The other thing interestingly happening going on here, Brandy, is the governments have a long ways to go. But they're really changing some rules and changing flexibility to make it easier for foreign money to flow into this country, kind of the opposite of what we're doing, right? So I think Mexico's going to continue to benefit from what we see going on. And I think you can throw in Costa Rica. I think you can throw in Puerto Rico. I think you can throw in all these outlying places. They're going to continue because we ain't slowing down this idiotic spending. And they're going to continue to be catch basins for that excess capital.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Costa Rica because we pulled up the top countries for U.S. citizens to go retire to. Costa Rica's number one,
yeah.
Portugal number two, and Mexico number three, which I guess my only hesitancy would be crime issues. But in a place like Cabo or somewhere where it's more just naturally touristy, I haven't experienced. I went to Mexico City. I would not retire in Mexico City. It took us 10 minutes on the street as Americans to be shaken down by the police and extorted. We were carrying around beers and they were like, we have to take you to the embassy. I'm like, how much money do you want? What do you want? What is it going to take? You know? So cause Cabo's pretty safe.
Oh yeah. No, look, I think most, I was talking to other people about having this conversation. You know, I think you sit there and you start talking about how dangerous Mexico is and all that kind of, yeah, there are places, but just go compare those statistics to Chicago.
Downtown, right? Like
you
just, Seattle.
You avoid it. The other thing is there really is this, you know, the cartel issue is always going to loom large and it's something to be concerned about. But there really is this unholy agreement, if you will, between the government and the cartels to really try to steer clear of tourists because nobody wins that game, right? Yep. It's just bad business. So the other thing, too, is just the draw. I can sit there and own assets and stocks in the United States, right? I can benefit from all of the ridiculous fiscal policy, and then I can take that sack of gold, that bag, and I can go somewhere else where the cost of living is one-fourth the amount, right? And until that is what we refer to in my business as a carry trade or an arbitrage. And when you see an arbitrage that wide, what you know is it's going to continue to be taken advantage of until it closes. So even if people don't want to move there, I continue to believe that, especially looking at real estate assets and other real assets and things of that nature, that, and it's kind of changed the way I've been thinking about with our clients, want to get some more of these opportunities, because even if you don't want to move here, I think owning assets in these places could end up being extraordinarily beneficial. So it's interesting to see what our fiscal profligacy and idiocy is doing to the rest of the world and the different opportunities it's creating. And we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. Well, how about this? You and your wife buy some assets in Costa Rica and Portugal and Mexico, and then invite Nicole and I.
I mean, that sounds like a plan. I'm in. I might. Hey, with your podcast though, I mean, and your presence here, I might be encouraging you to be the one that has to buy the property, and then you can have me stay there as like a pseudo groundskeeper and then financial advisor.
Yeah.
Be like
groundskeeper slash financial advisor. All right. You and your suntan line, have a good rest of your trip.
All right. Thanks, ladies, for having me. Fun as always.
Zach Abraham there with Bulwark Capital. He joins us every Thursday. He's also host of the Know Your Risk Radio podcast, knowyourriskradio.com. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team. He's the chief investment officer at Bulwark Capital because that's what they specialize in, managing your risk, protecting your retirement. So if you want to retire to Cabo, you can do that worry-free. And now is a better time than ever to do this because the election, all the mess, all the lies being told about the economy, what's happening globally, your retirement's too important to put it at risk. So schedule your free portfolio review now, knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. And we did miss one super chat from Stephen Lazarus, $4.99 super chat. Brandy, do you think this state stands a chance moving forward? Recently moved back home after military retirement. I'm second guessing it already. Well, congratulations on your military retirement. Thank you for your service to the country. And we need people like you here. So please stay. And look, if Bob Ferguson wins the governor's office in 2020, well, that's this year, in November, then yeah, you can move. At that point, like, I've given up too. So hi, Lucky. We're good. Shall we close with a sanity check? Was there something
the
I was
Dory
supposed to do?
Purse this
oh,
weekend?
Yeah. Really quick before we get to sanity check. So this weekend, Saturday at Emerald Downs, is the Dory Monson Memorial Purse. It happens every Saturday on Preakness weekend. So Nicole and I are going to be there. I'm sure members of Dory's family are coming. And we just want to invite any friends and fans and people who miss him just to come to Emerald Downs. You just pay the regular admission to get in and just bet on the ponies like Dory loved to do. So it's going to be the sixth race. Scheduled for the day, the Dory Monson Memorial Purse. They'll have a nice little thing for him up on the screen. And you can just bet. What was Dory's trick for figuring out what pony was going to win? Is it the one who pooped? You know, you watch.
That's what you said he'd be let.
You let the.
I don't remember
let
that
the
advice.
Horse, if they pooped, they've lightened themselves up, right?
Makes sense.
And then just out the gate. So.
And last year we missed that. We didn't get to go down to the stables.
We'll do that this year.
So we'll do that
this year. Yeah, gosh, it was god hot last year. I do remember that. But, so join us at Emerald Downs, and we'll be moseying around and stuff and having a couple drinks. I might even wear a big floppy hat. Who knows? So the Dory.
You might.
I will for sure. Nicole's like, you might. I will. I tried to wear, sorry, really quick side note. I tried to wear a floppy hat to the Squim Irrigation Festival parade, and Nicole nixed it. She's like, no. She's like, that looks like you're like, ah, oh, I'm Brandy Cruz and I'm here. And here,
did.
I thought it was a nice hat to, first of all, keep the sun off, but also incognito. Just wander around.
It would have said, here I am.
So Nicole nixed it. That's okay. I'll wear it on Saturday.
You have a great opportunity.
Everyone. Don't have a say.
You'll blend right in this weekend.
Great. Love it. Okay. With that, we have quite the treat coming up, I hope, between now and November. And that might be a debate between the current president and the former president. Let's get to our closing sanity check. President Joe Biden must really be insane because he is actually goading Donald Trump into standing up on a stage with him and having an exchange of ideas, which I don't think will go as well for the current president as he hopes. Here's the video.
Donald Trump lost two debates to me in 2020. Since then, he hadn't shown up for debate. Now he's acting like he wants to debate me again. Well, make my day, pal. I'll even do it twice. So let's pick the dates, Donald. I hear you're free on Wednesdays.
Free on Wednesdays, the day where he doesn't have to be in court, I think. Be careful what you wish for. That has been our closing sanity check for today. And that has been today's episode of Undivided from me, Nicole, Mackenzie, Lucky. We wish all of you a wonderful weekend. We have a fantastic show for you on Sundays, per the usual, for subscribers on Sundays with subscribers. I don't know if you knew it, but there's an awful lot of trans children out on a small island in Washington. Something is going on, and a member of that community tried to get to the bottom of it, and she has now been vilified. She's going to join us, along with a detransitioner, and now the dogs are fighting, so now I have to go. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. You can support our show for just $5 a month.